Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow now, is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host Eddie Trunk.
Hey, everybody, it's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast, bringing you news-making interviews with the biggest names in rock and metal each and every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss an episode. And as I tell you guys every week, all of the interviews you hear on the podcast originated on my Sirius XM radio show. That is Trunk Nation. It's heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, on channel 103, Faction Talk, or anytime, live or on demand, on the Sirius XM app. If you can get Sirius XM, which means you live in the U.S. or Canada, and you are only listening to this podcast, you're only getting a tiny fraction of what I do on the radio on a daily basis. So come on board and join us. And hey, I got an easy way for you to do it. Won't cost you a penny. Sign up for a free 3-month trial. No credit card required. All you got to do is go to SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk. That's SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk. Get 3 free months of SiriusXM. Sample and listen to Trunk Nation live or on demand each and every day and get the entire picture of what we're doing. Again, no credit card needed. Sign up and come on board and try it out for 3 months free. SiriusXM.com/Eddie Trunk. The interviews I have for you this week will start off in my Las Vegas studio a few weeks ago. I went to see one of my favorite bands in the world, Rival Sons. They played the night that we did this interview. This happened earlier in the day prior to their show, so I had not seen the band yet at the time that I did this interview, but I have, of course, since, because after the interview, I drove these guys back to their gig and then went back there later and had my head blown off by this extraordinary band. You got to see Rival Sons do a headline show if you can. That is the way to see them, an hour and a half, 2 hours, always changing their set, 100% live, just amazing. And now with 8, soon to be 9 records out, really challenging for them to get a set list together that everybody's happy with because they've got so many great songs and records now. They were amazing when I saw them at House of Blues a few hours after the interview you're about to hear, but I was very happy when Jay Buchanan and Scott Holiday from the band said they would come by my Vegas place the afternoon before their show and sit in with me. And that's exactly what you're about to hear with those guys in studio. So we'll bring that to you first, and we'll tag on the end this week an interview with an up-and-coming artist I like a lot by the name of Aaron Jones. He comes from Seattle, just released his second full-length album, Chronicles of the Kid. Really like what Aaron is doing. And definitely a new rock artist to keep an eye open for. So we'll start with Scott and Jay in studio in Vegas as our first interview. And then we'll give you a little bonus on the back end with Aaron Jones calling in to the radio show. Enjoy on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I am joined by Mr. Scott Holiday of Rival Sons. Good to see you, buddy.
Good afternoon, Edward.
And Mr. Jay Buchanan. Good to see you.
It's good to see you too, man.
Where'd you guys come from, man? You came from the Pumpkin Store, right? You're out with Pumpkins?
We did. We were in Chula Vista, basically San Diego last night, and Irvine the night before. So we've been home for a second.
Last time I saw you guys was in New York, your own show. And that was at the Palladium, which was awesome. The record, it was the day the record came out.
That was the day, the eve of the release, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it was awesome. And
that club's weird, though. It feels like a full padded room. The whole room is padded. Did you notice that?
Well, it's an old movie theater. Uh-huh. I used to go see movies there.
Yeah.
And it is also below a Broadway theater.
Right.
So there is a dB limit for most of the bands that play there where you can, the front of house guy can only mix so loud, because if it's too loud, you will interfere with whatever's going on above in, sure, the Broadway theater. So it, I will admit, yeah, it's a bit of a sterile sounding room because
and vice versa. The theater can come down into our show.
Did you pick up on that?
We're trying to play Feral Roots, and it's I Love a Parade.
Did you really catch that?
No, it didn't.
Oh, I thought it was a charming room and a great location to be in the theater district. I was able to go for a run in the park.
Yeah.
Central Park, and that was really nice.
For us West Coast boys, California boys, it was great to step out after everybody loaded out late at night, and we're getting ready to get picked up on our bus out in front of the venue, and we walked out, and it's just, we don't get enough New York evening time.
Like the real Times Square.
Yeah, we're on Times Square, and we're like, wow, it's like, this is a thing. We don't spend a lot of time here in the evening, and it's just
all that
morning,
light. You feel like you could be in Tokyo or anywhere else, but it's like
people are buying toys and ice creams and drunk everywhere,
and like, buying other more illicit
things.
They're
buying other things too. Toys and ice creams, though, is happening. Those are all code words.
You know what's interesting is, you know, I've lived my whole life about 35 miles from Times Square in New Jersey, right? Mm. And I take it so for granted.
Yeah.
Because my whole life, it's about getting in and out of there around traffic. And even the, like, when I came to see you guys, like, people tell me all the time, hey, come to a show, we're playing. Well, I'm like, where? And they say New York. Nope, ain't happening. Because just for me coming in, even though it's 35 miles,
it's pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Tunnels 15,
yeah,
parking 60. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's a nightmare.
I'm like that just with LA.
I just don't want to deal.
I live at the beach.
Well, you guys are in Orange County.
Well, yeah, for us, like, or Long Beach and. LA is the same thing for us. Every movie you watch, television shows, everything, it shows where we live, you know, and where we've grown up and where we play shows and like downtown LA and everything. But it's got to be a really big deal, you know, to make the venture,
yeah,
to go and in and no catch a show, because it takes time. You got to park the whole thing.
There's no remote comparison from getting into LA to getting into New York, but still it is that way.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But again, the point being is, you take these things for granted when they're in your backyard.
Like, yeah, of course.
Living there my whole life, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty. I never went up in the World Trade Center when it was there.
Yeah.
I've rarely go to a Broadway show, maybe been to one. And so you just, but every time I walk through Times Square, it's like I got to get to the next meeting or the studio, wherever I got to go. So you never take that beat to say, this is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like even here, having this place in Vegas for the last couple of years, I find myself now that I have a place here in the burbs, I rarely go into the casinos on the Strip.
Yeah.
Now, tonight, you guys are inside Mandalay Bay at the House of Blues, and it's a 10-minute ride. It's easy. Mm-hmm. But still, you just, like, you find your, like, little bubble of your community around you, and you start hanging that zone.
Creatures of habit.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's what
kind of like that. Kind of, especially probably more so than ever, when a band like you guys spend so much time on the road. When you are home, you probably don't want to leave the house, I would think. Is that accurate?
I think that you got to remember, once we get home, families, you know, spouses, like all of that stuff, you have to remember that you've been out everywhere and you've been living the FedEx package lifestyle.
Right.
You are the package that's constantly in transit. Once you finally get home, you have to remember, like, no, we got to stay active. I've been everywhere, but they haven't.
Yeah.
So you got to, you know, you got to remember to go to the museum, go to the movies, go take the family out for culture.
Yeah. When I'm home, I hardly ever will ever go to a show because I go to so many shows on the road.
Yeah.
And part of my life and work is going to shows, and I'm constantly running around. So it's like when I'm home, it's like very rarely. And I'll say to the band, I'll see you, but it probably just won't be New York, New Jersey. It'll be Might be in Oklahoma or something, you know, but I'll see you because I got it laid out. So how's it all been going, though, since Dark Fighter came out, Jay? I mean, the response to the record, last I saw you, you guys, again, the record was coming out that night.
Right.
Now it's been out a little bit. I know that night you played a good amount of it, even though it hadn't come out. So how have you felt about the record being out there right now?
It's a really interesting, you know, that was our eighth record. And we have Lightbringer coming out in October. That's going to be the ninth record. We've gone through it so many times, but this one is very interesting because there are two installments that make a larger collection. And so putting out the first half, knowing that there's another one coming, it's like we talk about it, about having that refractory period in between a June release and a late October release. Having the opportunity to play these new songs and live the identity of who we are right now versus who we've been over the last 15 years. That's been great. Now, in terms of like fan response and things like that, I think it's all been great.
It's been great. Yeah. You know? I mean, people have received this record well. We're always trying to push our own boundaries and be as honest as we can with ourselves about the music. We don't want to alienate listeners and go so far out of what you've heard and what you love about Rival Sons, but we're like evolving so rapidly, you know, that we want to make different music. So we never know what's going to happen on each record. And with this one, we stepped into another world. I think it feels for us like we're pushing out somewhere. Are people going to like this? Are people going to hate this? We don't really know. It's not that we don't care, but we have to serve ourselves first.
Yeah, I don't think we've never been the type of band where to look at the art and feel like we're making a product for consumers. That's never been the case for us. When we get in there, it's about distilling the identity of who we are at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and this is no different. And I know a lot of, you know, everybody goes about it in a different way when it comes to creating art and making records and all of that, or even just the way they approach their shows. But for us, it's always been about serving ourselves first. And I think that anyone in our fan base who's followed us, you know, through the years knows that about us. And so I feel like these, you know, Dark Fighter was very much in step with that ethos, just making music that suits who we are.
Right. Gosh, now. I mean, for our heroes too, that's how it's been. That's the relationship.
Yeah.
Like when I'm looking at my favorite artists, my favorite records, I'm jumping on their train. They're not tailoring a record to me or to us. We're jumping on what they're telling us the story. They're the music
makers. I mean, there's so much that for me as a lifelong rock fan connects and makes me such a passionate fan of your band, and that is an element of it, is the dynamics in every record, the different journey every record's going to take you on, and you know, it's the fact that it's just so real and it's so honest, it's so great, and it's very rare, like, for, you know I truly love a band when I'm getting ready to see them and I can't wait to hear how many new songs they play from the new record. Mm-hmm. Most people go to a show and it's just like, oh shit, here comes the new stuff. I gotta go to the bathroom and get a beer. You know, going to shows my whole life, and you've seen it too. I mean, you see it in the audience a lot of times. When I went to see you guys in New York, the record hadn't even been out yet beyond the singles. It was coming out that night, and people were all in. At least when I go see you guys, I gotta be right on the floor, right in it, right? And I'm out there. I'm not like in any balcony or VIP. I need to be in it, and everyone was full on into those songs you did that night. And I think it's not only a great testament about your fans, but the fact that they're open to going along with whatever that journey you're going to take them on is, and the strength of the songs, you know? Yeah. But that being said, you are also now getting into a bit of a problem, which is a good problem to have. You mentioned eight records, ninth coming very soon. You got to do a set list that's going to kind of touch on a little everything, right?
We're going to play two songs on each record, guys. So pick your favorite two songs on each
record. Is that what you're doing?
No. That's not what we're doing. You know what? We're really just keeping it real. Like, you know, we're dipping, like with the Smashing Pumpkins tour we're on right now, it's an opening slot. So it's we're doing really interesting stuff, like dipping way back into the catalog. We'll play Manifest Destiny, or we'll play Tied Up, or we'll play gosh, like this Bellstar, like these deeper cuts off our old records that people don't generally hear, because we're just kind of testing our moxie as a band. Like, let's play some deep cuts and see how these work. We know these other ones that people know, they work. We know, like, the Electric Band, Do Your Worst, Keep on Swinging. These songs, they work, you know, but let's see if these deep cuts work too. And we're finding that not only do they work, they kind of almost work better. Maybe it's how we're playing it. I don't know.
But that's an interesting environment to pick to do that.
Yeah.
Opening for a bigger band like Smashing Pumpkins, where most artists would go into that saying, hey, let me give them Pressure and Time into Electric Man, into, you know, Feral Roots, into whatever. Going with the most streamed, biggest songs in that 40, you're going the other way.
Well, you have to look at it. I think that there are different ways to approach putting a set list together. But I think that at some point, being first of three, especially, those points, you realize that expectations versus perceived expectations versus your what you would really like to do, all of those things, you realize that they're arbitrary altogether. You know, like, are you going to make a greatest hits set based on what you think people are going to want to hear? And then if you do that based on what you think that people who aren't aware of us, what they're going to want to hear, like, you don't know. So just putting a set list together, what do we feel like playing right now? So we're a great band, and they're just going to, the people that are trickling in are going to watch a band enjoying themselves. And I feel like that's more infectious than serving up the hits.
So who's the middle band? You said your
first
song.
It's been Stone Temple Pilots.
So you guys, STP, Pumpkins, mm-hmm. is the order right now.
Yeah. And now, no, when we come forward, back, it'll be Interpol. Interpol's
going to be playing.
And they're in the middle mm-hmm. as well. So how long on the Pumpkins dates you're doing 40? Do you have 40?
45.
Yeah. All right. It's still not the... What are we getting tonight here in Vegas on the headline set?
Oh, yeah, a much longer show. Longer.
Three and a half hours.
Yeah, I'm all in. Let me take my edible right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be...
We'll play an hour and a half or something tonight. We'll play a lot of songs.
Now, here you go, are coming off of Pumpkins. This is a headline date on the routing. And talking about the set list, have you guys already, for tonight, sat down and written it? Or when has that process happened? Is that an hour before? Like... And are you guys at a point now where pretty much anything that, like, if I call out, like, hey, I want to hear All Over the Road tonight, and you're like, yeah, we can do it. Like, are you rehearsed on just about everything, or do you have a pool of songs that you're like, okay, we're rehearsed enough on these to do it?
We're basically able to pull things out if we just can touch up on some of the older ones with eight records. We might have to... Let's just run through, not even as a band. Let me just grab a guitar and let us just individually just get back into that song. Okay, we're good, and we can do it.
And we have to let our techs know what we're doing so they can have the right guitars set up on deck.
Band, I use a lot of different tunings. So you'll see a lot of guitars come out at night. It's not only because I'm it's not just guitar porn. It's actually a necessity. There's different tunings and capos and things, half a step up, half a step down, and we try to keep it pretty accurate. So
I got a friend of mine who has who manages a great guitar, custom guitar, vintage, whatever, like really cool high-end guitar shop in McKinney, Texas. His name's Brian Meter. The place is called Guitar Sanctuary. If you're ever through that area,
We're going to be up there. We're playing Dallas like next week.
Yeah, you got to go see this store, okay. Right? But Brian, you know, I love guitar, but I don't play.
Yeah.
But Brian is all in and knows all this. So Brian sent me a link of something you did, Scott, about the Scott Holiday rig rundown or whatever. And the guy's talking to you and your pedals and your guitars and this and that. And he sends it to me. He goes, yeah, I know you're a big fan of Rival Sons. You might want to check this out. And I got to be honest, in about 5 minutes, I checked out of it because I'm like, this is way too nerdy for me, man. It's like, I'm using the 22-gauge cable with this string and this pedal is going into feeding it. I'm like, I love this guy, but it's more than I need to know.
Those rundowns are for a specific type of person.
I don't think it is much.
I'm like, I watch those with people sometimes for fun, and I'm it's rapt attention. I'm like, oh, that's cool, that's interesting. Oh, you do that. Oh, okay. So the people watching it are probably those people. It's not for you.
But I know. But that being said, I mean, whatever the process is to get there, your guitar sound is friggin' legendary. It's so cool and it's so huge and it's awesome. So,
thanks, Eddie.
How's the pipes holding up, Jay?
I'm playing 45 minutes a night.
So you're rested?
Yeah.
You're just getting warmed up at 45 normally.
I am, yeah. For the most part, on tour, it takes a while. There's like different stages. By the end of the tour, I'm really in fighting shape. That's when my voice really comes together.
Is that right? Because yeah. I would think as you went on, you'd get tired, fatigued. You get stronger as you go.
Yeah, I think that it's, there's only a couple of things that will really set me back. You know, like pollen, you know, if it's during a season where you're dealing with a lot of histamines and all of that stuff, that'll get me. Or if I catch a cold, it always sets me back.
Never in my life.
It takes me a while to recover from that.
Never in my life have I known a voice more like Rocky Balboa. This is Jay's voice. He's a Rocky Balboa voice. It's like he takes the beating. He's almost down. It's over. The voice is completely gone. And then it's that last round of full triumph. You know, so when he breaks through that like beat down, that's where the voice sounds like the most triumphant.
I noticed that a little bit at the last show in New York. Like you seemed to like you got stronger as it went on, mm-hmm. and it's almost like you're like I don't know if it's like you're blowing stuff out or you're just it like
it's blowing out the lines.
It's like the best way I could describe it. It's almost like somebody just opened it up even more. As remarkable as it is, it's like it
uncogging
feels that
the
way.
Pipes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's. This is my rig rundown.
Let's go.
I think that for me, it's you never know exactly what you're going to get. Or for me, I don't know exactly where my voice is going to be. And I think that because it's physiology, it's not like I'm not pressing buttons or it's not the circuitry is always going to be a little bit different for me. And once I know where my voice is, then it's tempering and using, working within those parameters. Like, oh, tonight, ooh, that's not, that part of my range isn't so strong. So then it's negotiating and massaging and singing in a particular way that's going to suit my capabilities. And I think that takes a while. And then that's why toward the end of the show, it's the compensating and everything has been, like things are calibrated. And then I'm able to just sing.
Are you a big warm-up, warm-down guy, or are you one of those guys just walks out and does it?
I warm up. I began warming up, you know, in the last 2 years, you know, and...
You never did before?
No.
See, that blows my mind. In all my decades of interviewing singers, I will talk to some of the most legendary singers, and they will tell me, like, there's a two-hour warm-up and a two-hour warm-down, and then other guys will tell me, nah, I just fucking walk out and do it. And walk. Ronnie James Dio was like that.
That's amazing.
Ronnie, I would sit with Ronnie in his, I'll never forget this. The last time he was in Sabbath, 06, Madison Square Garden, just me and him sitting in his dressing room. And the guy comes in, his road guy, and says, Ronnie, 15 minutes to show. And I said to Ronnie, let me get out of here. Let you get ready. And he goes, get ready how? I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, don't you? No, he goes, he always called me kid. He's like, come on, kid, come to the stage with me. Walked down the stage, took a microphone, go into Neon Nights. Oh, no. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, he'd maybe take a little puff of a joint, maybe take a little shot of whiskey, and just go out and do it.
Well, with the voice,
and then after
that
the show, he's
too.
Right there. Like, he's like, it's not like, oh, I need an hour before I can see anybody. I got to do this and that. He's just like, open the door and pick up right where we left off. And this was when he was in his, like, mid-60s.
It's wild.
There's a, you know, I'm the type that when I'm approaching the show, and maybe some people aren't going to want to hear this, but like, I'm there for me. I'm not there for you. That's not my game. My job is when we hit the stage, my job is to be myself. My job isn't to meet your expectations. I'm not thinking about meeting your expectations.
Headline for this interview. Rival Sons doesn't care about you.
Yeah, they don't care about if you like their music, their records, if you like Jay's voice,
Rival
if you like Scott's
says,
guitar sound. Rival Son says, fuck everyone.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
So for me, I'm not there to meet your expectations of what you want to hear, how I look, what song. I don't care. I'm there to sing for me and to prove my metal to myself.
But again,
and to be as authentic as possible and to support him.
Yeah, that it know, falls into that same category. The people we go watch and love, I hope to God that's what they're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't want some people pleasing heroes. I want these people that are like, I'm watching their thing. That's what's cool. They're doing it for them. I'm like, I want to step into their world.
Yes.
So although this might sound, what Jay's saying might sound a little like, go fuck yourself. It's not. It's right. just, no, this is the relationship yeah. we all have with anybody that we watch in any type of entertainment. We're watching them do their thing, especially our writers, painters, musicians, any of that. We're stepping in yes. their world, and that we very much are like, you almost have to remind yourself in a way about that, because it could be really easy to slip into a people-pleasing world, you know, like, oh, I don't know if people are going to like this. I don't know if we should play this tonight because people might not like it. But at the end of the day, it's not fuck everyone, but it is a little bit fuck everyone.
Well, okay. Look.
Because then if we're happy.
Scott Holiday yeah. comment.
Yeah, that's.
I learned that from Jay. I learned that from Jay. But it's not.
I totally get what you're saying. Yeah, it's not really, it doesn't come off like that.
We love our fans. Right, I better say that right now.
Of course we do. But to maybe put it in another way, people show up, spectators show up. But in the end, I'm the guy that's got to, I'm walking up to the stage and I got to lift that heavy hammer and I got to break those rocks. You're just there.
Do you pick up, I mean, you know, you know, I must have said it a billion times, but I've talked to so many people that I know and love and who are amazing singers in their own right, whether it be a guy like Glenn Hughes, who I just talked to the other day.
Oh, he's
many,
fantastic.
Many Glenn's other people so who are
great.
Incredible.
He's great.
And they all say when I met, and I say it as well, when I mention you and I mention Jay Buchanan, Miles, you know, I talk to Miles Kennedy on the phone. He's like, oh, Jay, you know, they all say, you know, Jay Buchanan's the best singer out there right now. I'm telling you, they do. I mean, I feel that way as well. But regardless, do you know that's kind of out there? You know that what this band is about is the songs, is the whole group, the chemistry of the whole band, and of course you and Scott and everything that goes on, the records, everything. But there's people that are coming there every night too that maybe haven't heard everything about Rival Sons, and they're like, I got to hear this guy that everybody's talking about. Does that get in your head at all ever? Does that create any additional pressure for you ever?
No, not at all.
No? You know
no,
about?
Well, that's not real. That's not real. That, you know, that's something that exists outside my purview. Mm-hmm. That's right. Not who I am. That doesn't have anything to do with me.
Right.
And what I think about, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm the guy up there with the hammer, and my job is to break those rocks for those 90 minutes to 2 hours or whatever and give it everything I have, because it might be my last night on stage. It could be the last time I'm ever interfacing with this beautiful, beautiful energy, this beautiful free magic that I've been afforded, all of these luxuries and all of this great experience in my life and all of this travel. I get to interface and I get to go and try to earn that gift back. And it's by serving that magic. It's by serving that thing that got me there. I'm trying to earn back the talents that I was given. Mm-hmm. And I have 90 minutes to do it. And everybody that's there, whatever anybody has to say, anybody wants to say something nice, yeah, of course. That's incredible. But I can't wear that.
Right.
I can't wear that suit, you know?
Give me a minute to vindicate myself, too.
Scott's going into damage control mode. You didn't say anything wrong.
No. I'm not really vindicating, but let me just say that I want to clarify on the other side of my statement is that there is a nightly symbiosis with the audience, within the audience, with three people or with 3,000 or 30,000. There's a symbiosis, and it's very real, and it's very much part of the show. And when people ask, what are your favorite songs to play, or where was your favorite show? it really doesn't matter just on the band as much as we are just playing for each other. What happens is when we play these songs that we wrote in the studio, they turn into something different in the room for us. Then they turn into something different on the stage for us, but they turn into something different every single night with the audiences because of the way they appreciate, the way you can feel their energy, and especially becoming sober over the last for the last 5 years and playing shows, I'm really in touch with how the audience feels and that energy exchange that we're having. And the shows end up feeling very much like a group effort in that way, that I'm doing my part and the audience is doing their part and we're all creating this energy in the room together. So there's more than one angle on what's happening when you go see live music. And I think other people probably share this perspective with me too. There's a symbiosis with a band and an audience for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about seeing you guys. And first of all, congratulations on 5 years. I didn't know you were sober for five
Thanks.
Years, but congrats, man.
Yeah.
But there is something about that. Like I've said to even, I got a lot of friends coming to the show tonight and I even said, everybody's like, oh, we're going to get a table in the back. We're going to hang and go, no, I'm not this band. This, like, I'll do that for other bands. This band, I need to be in it, in the middle of that floor. I want this, and I don't want people talking to me. I don't want chatter. I don't want, I need, because it is that there is this, it, not to get overly goofy or dramatic about it, but when I hear you guys play and I hear the songs and the way it comes together live, I just want to be in it. You know, I want to get lost in that 90 minutes and block everything out. And I think I pick that up a lot with your fans. There is a very, very unique connection with the fans and what you guys are bringing them off the stage. It really is.
That's nice, man.
It's pretty special.
We're thankful for everybody that shows up, you know, and affords us the career that we have.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it easier to be part of the 0.5005% of musicians on the face of this earth that get to actually do this for a living, that get to make records, that have an audience. You know, I don't forget that. And that's part of that whole earning it back.
Speaking of records, so Dark Fighter is out now and phenomenal. And I love it. I listen to it nonstop. Candidate for album of the year for me for sure. Rapture, one of my favorite songs. The star of that video is actually here as well.
My boy.
You should mention Scott.
My son Devendra is here with us. Both my daughter Nava and my son Devendra are on tour for the next couple weeks, as well as Jay's
daughter
Acacia.
She's
out. Oh, nice. Yeah. All right, so cool. So but that record is out there. So that's out there now, and you touched on the next one coming.
Yeah.
And you know, Jay was on before giving his thoughts about these two records when Dark Fighter first came out. But Scott, what can you tell people about the next? Should we view this? It's called Lightbringer, right?
Correct.
Should we view this as a sequel or a companion to Dark Fighter? Or is it a completely different record that was just made at the same time? Is it you made 16 or 20 songs, you just decided to split them? Like, tell me about, from your vantage point, the process of doing this as two separate records.
I think we had, when we started, we recorded a big group of songs. We had a part one and a part two in there. We didn't know we were going to release them in two separate bits, but when we spread it all out and lined everything up, it was just too much. It was too long. It was too much for one bite. And when we talked about it, it just felt like it's too much for even like the way I listen to music. As much as I love a record, I always reference the record like The Wall. I'm like the biggest Pink Floyd fan and I love The Wall, but rarely do I sit down and want to listen to The Wall top to bottom. Maybe if that was part one or part two, I would like ram part one all the time and then get to part two, but it would be easier for me to digest. And I think for us with Dark Fighter and Lightbringer, this just seemed like the best way. Let people live with Dark Fighter. These songs are important. There's a story in here. There's a whole energy in here. And likewise, when you get to this, it will feel almost like an answer, like a sequel to you. And I think very much in my mind, this is an answer to this record.
So if we were sitting here and this was 1976 and we were talking about this, then it would probably be pretty likely that we would see a double Rival Sons record with these together.
I still don't think so. That's
no. Because my point is where I'm going is everyone's attention spans seem so shorter.
That's
now,
correct.
And everybody's like, oh, I just want singles or 30 seconds and I move on to the next.
Oh, I think you we would have put them
a
together.
Physical graffiti of rival sons
drop into 76. Their people were going long form.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we probably would have put them together.
I don't. And here's why. Because forcing a refractory period. We're a binge culture. We've always been that way. And having, you know, even having one long form thing, providing context through deprivation, you know, it's very important. It's a very important trick in storytelling. Intermission, breaking it up, like giving you time to reflect. The Dark Fighter album being what it is, it can live on its own. Like the all of those scenarios and the questions that you asked Scott just now, like, is it, you know, having 20 songs and needing to break them up? Is it that it just it lives on its own? Is it a companion piece? It's actually, I was listening to and each one of those things was actually kind of true.
Yeah.
Oh, it is that. And it is that. And it's that. But creating two collections to make one larger collection and putting a 4-month refractory period in there. That was very intentional in the storytelling, you know, because without breaking them up, the context could be lost, you know, in the two chapters, you know, that make one book, but they're two chapters.
When are you going to release the first song from the next record? Because if it's coming in October, here
next
we are,
week?
Mid-August.
Yeah,
oh,
next
really?
Week, yeah.
Here, let me get it. I got it on the Cali right here, dude. It comes out exactly 1 week from today. So on the 18th, you're going to hear the first single.
Can you give the name of the song yet?
Can we? You want to give it here?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it here.
It's called Sweet Life.
Sweet Life.
Yeah.
And that'll be the lead single 1 week from today from the second record. Is it? Should we be calling this a sequel or no? Is it a sequel?
Let's ask,
companion? How we find
yes and yes
it? Just another
and yes.
Rival Sons
it's
record?
It's
definitely
record.
I would definitely call it a companion.
Yeah.
Is there visual, like the album cover for Dark Fighter?
Oh, there's a whole visual thing.
Is there a thing,
thing
that connects?
Oh, big time, big time. We're going to get into it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, this is great.
You're getting into it right now or when
right
it comes
now.
Out?
Check this out.
You want to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
He pushed his mic forward. You hear
I
that?
I know, I got to lower
you
gotta it.
You got to adjust his gain. He got
this
excited.
This is deeper voice, I know.
No, I'm excited. No, this is it.
Jay Buchanan just woke up in Vegas, ladies and gentlemen.
Just like the show.
This yeah, is the Rocky's
exactly.
Warming up.
This is the third act right now.
I only got about 15 minutes left.
Okay,
before
so
I got to end, Jay.
Okay, so once we knew that we were splitting the albums, we had titled them, and okay, how are we going to do this artwork? AI art was just hitting the scene, and you know, very much into the arts community with painters and everything. A lot of friends that are very serious painters, some of the very best in the world. Looking at what AI art was doing and how threatening it was to the arts community and the large outcry. Now, this was like 9 months ago, right? 10 months ago. We were talking about it and it was like, ugh. The AI bot generated artwork, you see some of it and it just makes you sick. So, you know, or that was my initial reaction, like, yuck, ooh, you know, kind of feeling that uncanny valley. When you look at a robot or something that's too lifelike, like, okay, it is art, but it was made, ooh, I don't know if I want to touch this, but we talked about it and there was so much provocation surrounding the entire subject. Like, we got to lean into that. We want to lean into this. And so given our feelings, we didn't want to prompt this AI artwork. So we called a master of his genre, Martin Whitfooth, who had painted Feral Roots, who had painted Hollow Bones before that, our two previous records. We talked with him. He said, how do you feel about this? You go into the machine as a master painter and you create the AI for the first album. For Dark Fighter,
not knowing if he would be, you know, as an artist, like as a painter, kind of repulsed or offended, like this AI is like anybody can be an artist now.
Yeah,
you know, the controversy is like a lot of people feel like it's going to put real artists out of business. This is one side of the argument, that if people are using AI now, all these like mid to high level artists won't have a job because video game companies and all these places that need this kind of art can just like pump it out by putting prompts in.
Well, there's concern across the board with that. Obviously, there's a strike going on in Hollywood right now. And
It gets a lot deeper.
In this world, in radio, there's concern about it. I mean, we're doing talk radio, so that's kind of hard to recreate. But if you're doing straight music radio, they already just more than half the radio stations in this country don't have a live human being for years working in them because they're tracks. It's a recorded program. So there's concern across the board. And obviously, what's going on in music right now, even the creation of music, there's concerns about
it. I know. Look, I'll get back on into the story real quick. So he, as a master painter, giving the word prompts in order for this bot to create an image.
Yeah,
we sent him the record, and that was all. That was it. That's the only thing. We couldn't, in order for this to be an authentic art installation, he had to do it all himself. We couldn't be involved. So what he did is he created the Darkfighter album artwork completely through AI. And then for Lightbringer, he painted a response to it. So together they make one art installation.
So, or less than a response. He kind of used the same idea and prompts and had that record as well. I don't see the cover as a response as much as like his take. Like, here's using this tool. Here's using my facilities. Like, this is kind of, you could call it a response.
Yeah,
that's the idea.
So what you're saying is Darkfighter is AI created.
Absolutely.
And Lightbringer, with the same guy, is not AI.
It's oil paint.
So it's yin and yang, basically.
That's exactly what it is. And it's for him to be, he was looking at AI and everything more as a tool. He didn't feel threatened, of course, but AI, as it applies to art on all fronts, of course it's threatening. Of course it is, but it's here.
Yeah.
Cortez's ships they've reached the shore.
Yeah.
And here we are, the indigenous culture, right, going like, well, what's this going to mean to us? You know, I don't know, but it's part of our vernacular right now. And so we wanted to use it.
Before we run out of time, I got about 10 minutes left before I have to end the show. A few people would love to say hello to you, take a couple quick phone calls. 844-686-5863. Scott Holliday, Jay Buchanan of Rival Sons, live with us on this Friday in studio here in Vegas. Scott in Arizona is jumping in. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey.
Very good, man.
Hey, Eddie,
what's
I called
question?
You a while back. I'm the guy that lives in Phoenix, and I'm driving over for the show for tonight. I got my daughter with me. It'll be her first Rival Sons show.
Nice.
What time are you guys on? Hold on, Scott. What time are you guys on, by the way?
9:15.
9:15.
Yeah.
Is there an opening act?
Yes, there is. it's Hannah tonight, right?
Is it Hannah?
Let me double
check. Hannah Wicklin.
Gosh, we're so terrible.
So opening act probably 8. You guys are on 9:15?
8:30. 8. Yeah, 8. 7:38.
It's Vegas, so it's never early here, but
yeah,
not too early.
I don't know. Get there by 7.
Anyway, Scott.
Doors at 7:30. Yeah.
All right, Scott, what's your question for the guys?
My question is for Scott. I saw you got that new custom 12-string guitar. I was wondering if you were thinking about working up any of the songs that are suited for that, like Look Away from Feral Roots.
Are you talking about the acoustic guitar or the double neck?
The double neck, the 12-string, 6-string.
Oh, I actually had that guitar made. It's a beautiful Cower guitar. That I had made for Feral Roots.
Gorgeous.
And I when we played Look Away, I have a I don't have it out with me right now, but I have a 74 ES1275 Gibson that I use on that song. I don't have the guitar with me. I won't play it tonight, but I'm going to play a lot of other great songs, and I'm going to break that guitar out, and I'm going to break another double neck out that I just had built for the Darkfighter record.
Another one.
Another one. So I hope you and your daughter have a great time, man.
All right, Scott, we'll see you at the show. Drive safe to Vegas and look forward to seeing you, man.
Yeah, we're parked right now. We're not speeding down the highway, so.
Oh, all right. You're good.
See you guys in a bit.
See you, Scott. Thanks. Let's go to Southern California. Here is John checking in. Hey, John, you're on the air.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic. Hey,
long-time fan and long-time friend of one of your earliest supporters, Joey G, who unfortunately left us a couple of years back.
Yeah, man. Joey.
Hey, and we're trying to get you guys for some shows in maybe Inland Empire, Orange County, and maybe back in Hawaii. So any help you guys can provide for independence, really difficult going up against the corporations and the casinos. So, and Inland Empire, you may owe us a show since a lot of people may have bought tickets for tonight on the
phone. The Yarmouth show. I know. I just talked about that, actually, right?
Yeah. People think you're playing tonight somewhere you're not.
And, you know, we're so sorry about that. A lot of people bought tickets. You know, and they're going to get a good show. They're
it's a Smashing Pumpkins show, but you're not on it.
Yeah.
And who is on it? Is STP on it?
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, there was some, it was kind of just confusing how they put icons on the show or on the names of the bands for what, who's, so we,
it can be
let's say we owe you guys a show. We want to come out there. We love our people in the 909. We'll get out there.
No, we definitely owe you guys a show.
Is there any truth that, you played with the Baron Von Tito back in the day?
No. I don't think so. Von Tito, no.
Yeah, nope. Travis Barker?
No, no, no. No, I mean, I went to school with Travis when we were kids.
Yeah.
But no, we, you know, I was never part of that.
Okay.
He went and it did his thing. And
I like that rumor, though.
Thank you, John, for the call. Yeah, I mean, we could float some rumors out there, get a little buzz going.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what I wanted to ask you real quick? I talked to Jay about this last time he called into my show, but I never asked you about this, Scott. And I joked about this because I said, if these guys are getting paid every time this commercial plays, they're buying beers next time I see them.
The Chevy commercial.
Chevy commercial with the song Pressure and Time. Everywhere, like for a year or whatever.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that, man? Hearing that riff, just a Super Bowl, every minute, it was everywhere.
I think it's great. I think it's fun. It's a little weird. I figured after the first, after the first couple of weeks watching like football season, last football season, it was on so much.
Yeah.
That it was like everybody was like, yeah. My band, this is killer. Love hearing you guys. Tons of people hit me up about it. And then probably 2 weeks after that, they're like, Jesus, man.
Enough already.
I'm sick of this shit. You know, but it's nice. It's a good campaign. They don't pay us every time. Sorry, you're still buying the
shit.
I don't have beers, but
well, you don't have beers anymore, but Starbucks.
You're still buying Eddie.
All right.
But it's a cool spot. It's funny, we did a deal with them up for Canada too. So during football season, while it was in the US, all my friends, you know, Dean from Stone Temple even just hit me up while we were at home, and he goes, dude, every commercial break, it sounds amazing, I love it. And then we did this deal up in Canada with him, and I'm friends with Randy Bachman, and Randy did the same thing. Oh, buddy, hockey, every commercial. Sorry, he doesn't really talk like that. I just wanted to give him the Canada voice.
They came to you, right, and asked you to use that song?
Yeah,
or
that's
did somebody
it works.
Pitch it to them, or they came to you? Because, I mean, that's great placement. The thing that would have been cool is I saw the Struts had a song in a car commercial similar, right?
Yeah.
A year or two ago, and I was talking to Luke about this.
Yeah.
But they managed to get, when there is a shot of the radio in the car, it said the Struts.
We didn't get the it's called a Chiron, I guess they call it, maybe.
But they
something.
Actually positioned it so like the display on the car.
That's
and the
cool.
thing. But yeah, it would be great if you could get the Chiron. I mean, I'm sure people like Shazammed it or whatever if they didn't know it was you guys.
People did, and that is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how'd you find out? Oh, the Chevy commercial. Wow.
Our deal came in really hot and fast. Like, it was real quick, actually.
Yeah.
We approved it reasonably quick, and we tried to get that, but I think it was already done. The commercial was already, they couldn't throw that on there.
Would you say now, because of that commercial, that song, the song Pressure and Time from the album of the same name, do you feel like that's your biggest song right now in your catalog?
No.
No?
I don't think so. I think it's spiked for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. But even now it slows down a little bit. I think probably the biggest song in the catalog is is probably still Do Your Worst.
Yeah. I don't know.
When I saw you guys a few years ago, and it was Easter Sunday in Brooklyn, if you remember.
Yeah, at the Steel, Steel House.
Only time I was ever at that, venue.
Yeah.
But I remember I was amazed at the response to Keep On Swinging when you played it there. Mm. That was like crazy.
I remember you saying that.
I was like, wow. I think it was your last song. I was like,
that's a good closer.
Yeah.
You know what we say, and going back into our conversation about the set list and pulling random songs, this band is interesting in the way that we have songs that people know. We've had some number ones. We have Grammy nominations and all this stuff. But this band doesn't have a song that's gotten so eclipsingly big that we can pull back. There's songs throughout all of our career, through on every record, that you don't know that might have, could have been that. You know what I mean? So like Keep On Swing is one of those songs. We made a video, but we were on an indie label that didn't get the push that some songs would be. Like we play with Stone Temple Pilots right now, or Smashing Pumpkins. They have to play some of these songs. If you don't hear Plush, Interstate Love Song, if you don't hear these songs, you're like, oh man, how could they not do it? And if you're getting deep cuts in that, you kind of have to get those super hits. With us, we're able to dig deep in there, and people kind of just appreciate our band for being Rival
Sons. It's funny. We regularly don't play
Keep On Swinging in New York.
Or we regularly
won't play
Pressure in Time, or even Do Your Worst. You know, we just... We're not beholden to that sort of thing we haven't gotten that big.
But I think that as a fan, I think that's great because I never know what I'm going to go into. Yeah. Like, when's the last time you did Fade Out? I love Fade Out.
A long time. We haven't done that in a minute. We haven't done it. We probably haven't done it since Hollow Bones was
maybe
current.
Tonight's the night.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Could you work that up like that?
Oh, I'm working with the new rig. I have to put it together.
You got a few hours, Scott. I'll be looking for it tonight.
We absolutely could.
Well, listen, I appreciate the hell out of you guys coming by. We got like 2 minutes left before we got to end. Anything you want to mention or talk about? We now just revealed a week from today the name of the first single from the next sequel, maybe not sequel to.
Yeah, this is our first time talking about it.
Yeah,
too.
So
you heard it here.
So. Lightbringer is the actual release date of the full record is
October 20th.
Yeah.
Right.
October 20th. And the first single a week from today, it called again, revealed exclusively.
Sweet Life.
Sweet Life. So can't wait for that. It's cool. Cause I'm Jay, your idea kind of worked. Cause I'm so all in on every track on Dark Fighter. And now I'm ready for another serving, you know, I'm like, I'm good. So I like the strategy. It's working.
Gotta go go get another plate and hit the buffet.
I'm saying is track one, Lightbringer, buckle up, dude.
Well, thanks to Scott and Jay for joining me there. That was awesome. The show that night that I saw was phenomenal. And also, just to let you know, Sweet Life, the new song from the coming new album, Lightbringer, is now out. That interview took place live on the radio a couple weeks ago. And they said it was coming out the following Friday, and they didn't lie because it's out there right now. So check out the first offering from the sequel to Rival Sons' Dark Fighter album. You just heard the guys talk all about it. Can't wait for that.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's get to a second interview for you this week. It is with A'Ron Jones. This is great. His new album is fantastic. It's out there now called Chronicles of the Kid. A'Ron is a great new young rock artist you should absolutely keep an eye open for. Let you hear from him right now on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. How are you, bud?
Eddie, what's going on, man? I'm doing quite wonderful, quite well indeed, sir.
Good to talk to you, man. Congrats on the new album. It's killer.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I never know what to expect when I drop an album, so it's always an anxious time, and I'm always relieved when I find an audience that can really accept and be into what I'm doing, you know. So it's been an exciting time right now for me as I'm getting ready to head back out on tour.
So for people that don't, you've been on with me before, and I've been talking about you a lot because I love what you do, and you know, I remember when I had you on the very first time for the previous record, we talked a little bit about that. And I guess if I have this right, that previous record was really kind of like put together from a bunch of different things, like some stuff you had previously recorded or maybe even released, and then maybe some newer things. Do I have that right? Was Child of the State kind of like... I know it was your first major label record, but it was kind of pieced together from different things in your past up to that point?
Yeah, because I was I had two indie records up to that point, and in order for me to get signed and like see myself where I wanted to see myself, I went back into my old catalog and I re-recorded a bunch of songs that I thought would fit the bill, you know. So I went back and I grabbed four or five songs at the suggestion of management and re-recorded and, you know, did the lyrics and rearranged and did some songs over, and they took that to the label who loved it. That's kind of what set off the label deal for me. And this new record is actually, it's pretty much all new songs. It's put maybe one song that comes from an older record that I re-recorded, but this is all brand new stuff that we're putting on this new record.
That's what I was going to ask you about. So that's a kind of a different thing where a couple things really on that. For all intents and purposes, people like myself and many others viewed the previous record as your debut and view this record as your second record. And there's that old adage where you've got your entire life and all this bank of material to make your first record. And then all of a sudden, okay, the first record does what it does, sets the precedent, introduces you to people. And then there's that pressure of like, oh shit, I got to write a whole new record now. And I don't have that backlog of material. How did that work for you? How'd you feel about it?
Well, I felt pretty good, you know, the thing with that, you know, that old adage, man, I knew that going into releasing my first record that it was gonna be pressure if I didn't start working on it right away. So, you know, truth be told, a lot of people don't know this, but I started working on my second record right like the day or two after that my first record came out. And so I started working on that right away because I knew that I wasn't gonna have time with my touring schedule. I was gone probably 85% of the year on the last 2 years, and my touring schedule, I wasn't gonna have time to get in the studio and do all that. So I knew right away I had to get started, and that's kind of what I did. I toured the world, and then whenever I came home, I'd spend a couple weeks home with the fam, and then head out to Nashville to go record, man. So I spent a lot of time away just recording and touring. That's it, man.
Yeah, so the material that you knew this was coming down the pike, so that afforded you a lot more time than being under pressure. Did you write a lot while you were on the road for the first record? Are you a guy that writes on the road, or do you mainly have to like set that aside and just focus in on writing and you can't do it while you're playing live? I know there's people have different feelings about that where they do stuff anywhere, anytime, and others like, no, I got to just lock away and write. How's your process work with that?
Yeah, I had to like lock myself away and write. Like, I'm not really on the road. Like, I come up with ideas and things like that. But with the way that I've had to tour, which is like very little rest, a lot of movement, you're like in a different place every night, and you know, we don't have a bus. I mean, we have a Sprinter van that we use to go cross country, but it's hotel rooms and it's, you know, it's a lot of movement. It's rigorous, you know? And so, typically I try to like take myself and lock myself away with, by either for myself or with songwriters to get the next record going. And so, I teamed up with, Marty Fredrickson and Scott Stevens, two producers for this record, who helped me write a bunch of these songs along with a little writer that they called the Four Horsemen, who actually have a lot of familiar tunes on the radio. They've worked with people like Hailstorm and Dorothy and Shinedown. And so I work with those cats, and they helped me put together this record and really brought out my personality in the songs, which is kind of a first for me working with people, is that having somebody kind of observe you from the outside looking in and say, hey, I think this would fit your bill, you know, fit what you do.
Yeah, well, it really picks up where the other record leaves off, man. And I think it's killer. I mean, I love what you did. I love it as a follow up. And having seen you live, now I saw you live at Rocklahoma. I guess it was last year. I think it was the first time we actually met, and I saw you play because I host that every year. And I was glad to see you're back on it again this year. And I know you've got a bunch of dates coming up in America, but before we talk about that, you just your manager's a good buddy of mine, Michael, and he was telling me that I guess you played you were outside of the country, right? You're playing where, in Europe recently?
Yeah. I've been all over.
So tell me about that.
Yeah, you know, when my first record dropped, I mean, it kind of caught fire pretty quick, as well as being talked about in some of mainstream America. I really hit in France right away, and that first show we did in France kind of set a bomb. And since then, you know, I've been asked to open for the Stones in Paris, and, you know, I've been on mainstream television there, and I'm kind of seen more as a pop artist in France, and we're starting to pick up more. I went number one in Germany off that first record as well. And so, you know, I've taken the time to keep going back and hitting that market because I know how important it is. And, you know, that they say something in the industry, it's like, you know, you, in America, we're kind of here today, gone tomorrow. But in Europe, if you can get fans in Europe, you'll have fans for a lifetime. And they're always going to be there and show up at your shows, no matter where you are in the world, you know. And so we found it was really important for us to get out there to Europe and make sure that those fans heard about us. And it's been taking off. So I spend about half a year in Europe, typically, if I'm touring, you know.
Yeah, that's always amazing to me because there are bands, a lot of them are friends of mine, that tell me like they're American bands, but they're way bigger in Europe, whether it's the Alter Bridge guys or Rival Sons or Blackstone Cherry or some of these guys that like do arenas in Europe. And yeah. It seems like that in certain European markets, like straight up hard rock or even blues flavored hard rock really tends to connect a little bit more quickly there than it does here. I guess you kind of experience that yourself in a good way.
Yeah, I think the difference between the American market and the European market, I think, is that, you know, Americans are really, we're really Instagram. And like we if we want something, we're used to getting it our way and getting it kind of right now, you know? And so, I think that creates a certain demand for music, and our attention spans aren't as long because there's so much going on around us, you know, whereas the Europeans are really good at taking time to back away from everything, you know, like with things like siestas and holidays and things like that. So I think the European market just takes a little more time to step back. And a big part of it too is that, like, in America, we have a lot more separation between, you know, genres in the mainstream, right? Where, you know, someone like Billie Eilish could be maybe heard on the pop radio, and she'd maybe be heard on, you know, alternative radio, but you're probably not going to hear her on hard rock radio. You know, you're not going to hear her on like Octave,
right?
You know,
right.
Whereas like in Europe, it's not quite like that. Right. So a rock artist could be hard rock, but still be heard on mainstream radio there. So it's just a little different, man. We have a little different flavor.
And did you actually open a show for the Stones recently? Have you done that already? Or is that coming up?
No, yeah. So I've opened for the Stones twice now. Right after my first record dropped, they had us come open for them in Detroit, and then the following 6 months later, they called me up by name to come open for them in Paris in front of like 60,000 people right there. So it's
dude, what
it's
was that like,
now,
man?
It's crazy.
What
crazy.
Was that like? what is that like?
You know, like the thing about when you start playing these big shows like that, like your thought is not how crazy this is. It's like making sure everything is going to flow and flow correctly for you, that there's no problems in the show, because it's a big opportunity. You have one chance. I mean, I think about a band like Greta Van Fleet, who's an awesome band, but everyone kind of recalls a bit of the cringe that happened when they played SNL, you know? So you don't want to think too hard about the moment so much. You want to think about like how you're going to show up and make sure that you represent yourself the best. You know what I mean? So it was just insanity, though. I mean, I never forget looking out and seeing just a sea of people, 60,000 people all the way back, you know, and Scott Borchetta showed up. My management showed up. It was a big deal, man. So it was a really amazing show. And it kind of, and for me, having already started something going on in Paris and in France, it boosted me up 10 times from that point. And, you know, so now, like, I consider myself a remote citizen of France as I do America, you know.
Yeah, well, I know that. Yeah, and there's some, like, Lenny Kravitz has a place over there. I know he actually is a huge, and Lenny does well everywhere, but I talked to Lenny. I know he's I think he lives there, actually, maybe even part time, because they really embraced him early on as well. So it's just interesting how you see, you know, these certain pockets, like where certain artists do so much better than others. I got to ask you, did you get to meet the Stones? I mean, I've talked to other bands who have done that, and they've told me that you kind of get like an appointment, like there's like a 5-minute thing where they'll walk in and say hello. Did you get a chance to actually meet Mick or Keith or any of the guys?
Yeah. So they had just gotten over COVID in Paris. And COVID was still pretty rampant by the time we opened for them in Detroit. We didn't really get an appointment, but I did get a chance to talk to Mick briefly as we were switching off for our sound check in Detroit. And he took the time. He actually walked past me, and then he took the time to stop, turn around, and like came back to chat with me for a good few minutes, man. And I'll never forget just the kindness of his heart and how humble of a person he is. He's kind of a shy person too. You know, you don't really think of someone at that magnitude to be a shy or you know, timid personality, but that's kind of my experience with him. But he's just the nicest person. He knew my music. He was excited to have me on. And the only other experience I have is kind of through the production manager, who told me that, you know, one of the reasons that we were on that show in Paris is because Keith loved what we did so much, you know. And so, you know, it was, I mean, to get into their good graces early on, I mean, I don't know, man. It's been quite the ride, you know. And I'm at this point where I'm just trying to bring people into, you know, what I'm doing through other means, because we live in this era where the music may not just be enough, you know. So you have to be more visual and social media wise. So, I mean, I've done all these big, huge things, and I'm doing big, huge things. But now I'm trying to, like, bring people into the story, because it happens so quick. I'm going to catch people up, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. So going back to the record for a second, want to ask you about a couple tracks that are among my favorites. If you give me a little something about their origins. And I was also curious, you said there's one on here that was one that was a little bit older, that wasn't newly written. So I was wondering what that one is. But one of my favorites on here is Living for the Fall. That one's a really cool vibe. Like, what's the history of that track?
Man, you know, that track was actually originally one that I was planning on taking to the label. We had done a demo of it a while back, and it didn't quite make the cut on that first record. But then, you know, when we were looking up the songs to put on the second record, that one was like kind of top of the list because of the vibe on it. And, you know, my thing, after working with Barrett Martin out of Screaming Trees and a number of Seattle sounds like Sir Mix-a-Lot, and having worked with, you know, these people that have taught me how to sound like I'm from Seattle, that was the one that I sell through the most, which was, you know, I took the melody from that Pearl Jam melody, and I kind of worked on that and wrote a song from it called Living for the Fall. Because at the time when I was writing this song, man, you know, I'm trying desperately to get signed, because at this point, like, my indie career is pretty much at a full stop. My management had the idea of wanting me to rebrand and re-release and do all these things. So for about 2 years, my records were pulled off the shelves. There was no history, no nothing about who I was as an artist. And it was a desperate time for me. So I remember just like thinking to myself that, like, you know, everything I do is to live for, like I'm jumping off a cliff at all times, you know, like I'm always looking at this cliff and saying, I need to jump. And so that's what Living for the Fall is about, man. And there's actually a backstory that goes into that too, about, you know, there's a character that, if you listen to these records, the character that lives throughout these records, and it's about also about reincarnation and a bunch of other spiritual things that I tend to think about and contemplate too. You know, so Living for the Fall really embodies a bunch of different things at once.
So does Other Side tie into that theme too, I would think?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think other side is more, you know, we're in a fast forward up to more modern times and more present times for me. I think other side really is, it kind of lends towards that, but it's more about, you know, there are things that happen in this industry, as you know, you've been around it long enough. You live in these moments, and it may not be the healthiest thing for you to do in the long term of things, but you do it because you only have this one chance on earth to be and live. And so that's what other side's about, is just taking that moment to just live, man, to like make some mistakes, get in some good trouble, and like just live the best day you ever had in your life, even if it means that you're gonna have to pay for it, you know, a little later on down the road. Like, this is the time for us to do it, you know. Like, life is too short for us to sit there and contemplate what if, you know. So that's what Other Side is about.
And there's a really cool track called Filthy where they say they call you filthy. Yeah. Is that a true story?
Yeah. Yeah, so listen, man, that song right there is actually, if you're from Seattle, like born and raised in this town, and if you've been here for a while, like that's like a real thing we say out here, almost like the East Coast. It's akin to saying like wicked on the East Coast. You know, we actually say filthy, and filthy means the best of the best. You know, it means the top of the tier, you know. And so, that's a real true story, man. They do call me filthy out here. They say that about a lot of things. You know, they say that person's filthy, this is filthy, that's filthy. It's a real thing. My kid, even my 4-year-old, is always like, oh, Dad, that's filthy. I'm like, I know, dude.
I know, right? I never heard that. I never heard that one. And I never heard wicked. Like, I'm from New Jersey. East Coast, yeah. We never said wicked. I think wicked is more of like, well, maybe that's like a Boston thing. I think maybe that's
Boston
more thing, like yeah. Boston. Yeah, that's wicked cool or whatever. But yeah, so I was wondering about that. And then the record just comes out and kicks with those opening tracks with Straw Man opening it and Blood in the Water. I mean, just sets the table and just top to bottom, man, another killer record. I'm really, really psyched for you. And it's great to see you take another big step here as far as just people getting more people out there getting to know who you are and what you do. And having seen you play live last year, man, I'm all about people just like real live going for it. And man, this stuff really comes alive on stage for you. And I know you've got a bunch of dates coming up. Are these headline shows outside of the festival stuff? Is it a headline tour?
No, it's not a headline tour. I'm actually, it's a broken down called the Bare Bones Tour. And I'm opening for Chris Daughtry for about 2 months here to the end of September. And then back over to Paris to do a couple headline shows. We're going to be doing mainly just, bigger rooms. And then there's a couple of festivals I'm stopping off at. Aftershock, I'm doing Rocklahoma. I think there's probably one other in there, and then I'm playing Vegas. So, you know, we're really just kind of it's me gearing up for next year, really. You know, I mean, like as I'm doing all these like broken down tours, it gives me time to really start to focus on the headline shows that we're focusing on trying to get next year. So, you know, as we are, you know, right now I'm sitting at number 6 or so on the media base and Billboard rock charts. And so as we keep pushing this single up and hopefully, you know, we can get ourselves up to the top 5, if not number 1, as we're getting all this together, I'm working on just trying to make sure that the next stage of my show is even more epic than it was before, you know.
I just saw Chris Daughtry and his band. I'm in Vegas, so I have a second home, and I just saw them play on Saturday. I just talked to all of them and I just was at their show and they told me they had a run coming up. I didn't know you were on it. That's awesome, because I think you'll be great with that audience. I'm curious. They were telling me that their thing that they're going to do, most of the dates are going to be kind of like semi like acoustic. Are you playing full electric?
No. I'm coming down with it. Just being me and my guitar player. We're going to do mostly broken down sets, except when we fly out to do the bigger shows at the festivals. Then we're going to be doing a bigger band shows. And so, yeah, but it's going to be pretty much broken down, which is pretty cool because, you know, for me, I think if you see me live and you see me with the band, it can kind of be hard to tell where I come in versus my guitar player. Like, there's a lot going on. So these are my favorite because you really get to see the artist, you know. And so I get to show my true to form raw artistry to people on this tour, which I think is going to be really, really helpful in going into next year.
And I noticed that you've got something in Vegas called, I think, SEMA Fest or something like that. Yeah, SEMA Fest.
That's right.
Is that a full electric show? That's November.
Absolutely. That's a full-on electric show for sure. Anytime you see me at these bigger shows, it's likely going to be an electric show. I hope, unless we're real broke, and then maybe not. But I'll see it happen. Yeah.
I got you, man. I know. It's, you know, carrying gear and a full band. I get it. Totally. Everybody can find out where A-Ron is playing. Go to aaronjonesmusic.com is the website, and there's a whole bunch of dates that kick off. Actually, kicking off on Wednesday is the first one in Carmel, Indiana. So it sounds like the dates with Daughtry, like Daughtry's doing, kind of stripped down a little bit, but then the full-on electric stuff will be happening at the festivals and some of the bigger bigger gigs. And what's the single that you're working right now? Is it My America?
Blood in the Water is the single we're working right now. Currently sits at the in top 10 on the Billboard rock charts and media base at the moment.
Cool, man. Well, listen, always great to catch up with you. I'll see you in hot and sweaty Oklahoma. I remember last year we were sitting there on that back ramp and we were all trying to get some air.
Well, that was, it's that crazy. Was 21. I mean, that was when we, that was that first year we left. Man, I'll never forget how hot that was. That was our first real big festival too. That was the first week we were out. We were like, oh my God, it was so hot. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That was, it is 2 years ago. So this is, man, time's flying. It's hard to keep up. You know, when I saw Daughtry the other night, he played outside here in Vegas and they didn't get on for an hour and a half because the console went down from the heat. Oh, so it's insane. Definitely, you got to be careful out there in some of these spots where they do outdoor shows and be well hydrated, man. Cause, and I know your band and you don't just stand there. You guys bring it when you play. So you got to definitely be prepared for it.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, you know, we're going to put it all out there. I mean, even since that first day we left on tour, man, it's always been a grind. You know, we don't have a huge package that we tour with, and we get up there, we don't have any tracks or anything like that. We plug in, and what you see is what you get. Sometimes it doesn't always work out, but you know, most of the time it ends up being a special thing for the people to see. You know, so we're gonna keep grinding it out no matter what.
Well, God bless you for that. Thank you for keeping it real and keeping it live, because that's the only way rock and roll should be, in my opinion. And I give nothing but props to the artists that do that. So thank you for that as a rock fan. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate you, man.
Hey, man, listen, safe travels out there. If I don't catch you sooner, I'll see you in Oklahoma. And keep kicking ass, man. Everybody pick up A-Ron's new album, Chronicle of the Kid. Chronicles of the Kid, it's out now. Looks like there's a nice vinyl version of it as well, right? You got like a colored vinyl and the notebook and all that. I've got CD. It's killer, man. So however you want to grab it and go see A-Ron do his thing, it's smoking. AaronJonesMusic.com, and as you mentioned, some singles and videos out there right now to check out as well. I'll talk to you soon, man. Take care, all right?
All right, brother. Thank you, Eddie. Appreciate you, man. Talk soon.
Thank you to A-Ron Jones. Great to check in with him. Check out his new album, Chronicles of the Kid, that is out now. The first album, Child of the State, which is also, of course, out now, is also fantastic. Definitely a great young rock artist to keep an eye open for. And, of course, we started off with Scott and Jay of Rival Sons in studio, and appreciate those guys taking the time out on a show day to come by my Vegas place and hang out with me in studio and live on the air. Again, everything you just heard originated on my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation. Join me Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, live on Faction Talk 103, or anytime on the SiriusXM app, either live or on demand. There's a bunch of audio and video archived there as well for you to check out anytime. And again, if you're not a SiriusXM subscriber, come on board. All you got to do is go to SiriusXM.com/EddieTrunk. You get a free 3-month trial, and you can listen to the show live or on demand and find out what you're missing. No credit card required. Be sure to sign up. All right, we'll see you guys. Have a fantastic, if you're in the U.S., have a fantastic Labor Day weekend coming up. Nice long weekend for most people. If you happen to be attending Rocklahoma this weekend, I will be hosting it once again. So I'll see you out there in hot and sweaty Pryor, Oklahoma, all 3 days. And back here for another podcast next Thursday. Have a great, great holiday weekend again if you're in the U.S. And everybody else, again, I'll catch you on next Thursday for another Eddie Trunk podcast. Take care.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.